Hi, everybody. Welcome along to episode 136 of Percussion Discussion. Before we get into it, I'm going to ask you to, as usual, please check out all of our social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and of course, our world famous YouTube channel, where you can find all of our conversations, past and present, with the video to accompany as well. You won't find any adverts on our YouTube channel, but can I ask you to subscribe anyway, please? It really helps grow the channel. Thank you. If you prefer to listen on the go, then the great news is all of our conversations are available in podcast form. These are free to download from your favorite podcast providers. Please rate and review. Again, this really helps to grow the podcast and get it out there to like-minded drummers. Thank you very much. Anyway, on to today's guest. I was privileged to spend some time with Jared Falk. Jared is the founder and CEO of Drumeo, and I'm pretty certain every person out there knows exactly what Drumeo is. They're responsible for bringing us the most high quality content that's you can see all over the place. It's all over YouTube, it's all over social media, and of course they have their incredible drum courses where you can sign up and learn from the very, very best. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome the marvelous Mr. Jared Falk. Jared, thank you so much for doing this. It's hugely appreciated.
Thank you, Maddie, for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
Oh, well, it's a real pleasure. And you know, I'm sure we all know what you do, and I'm sure you've got a million other things you'd be better doing. So it's even more appreciated.
No, dude, I'm so happy to be here. I love doing this kind of stuff.
Ah, well, that's great. That's great. So What are you up to at the moment? Anything interesting happening? I bet there's always something interesting happening.
There are so many things happening now. So the company is called Musora, right? And so that has Drumeo, piano, and we do lessons now for guitar, vocals, drums, and piano. So although Drumeo is the baby and always will be the baby, it's become a lot more complicated than when it was just teaching drums. So yeah, lots going on, but it's all good. I get to do so many different things.
You know, I was watching one of your videos from, I think it was 15 years ago, from your own YouTube channel, and things have progressed. I mean, don't get me wrong, the quality was great then, but now it's a whole different level. I mean, lots of people do an online thing, but nobody can get close to the quality, and it's just a remarkable thing. You must be so proud looking at how it is now.
I'm so proud. And there's so much work that goes into creating that content now. Like when it was me in my basement at the time, probably the video you're watching, I was literally plugging in cables, framing up the camera, doing the lesson, editing the video, posting the video. But now Musora has a team of amazing people that do all that, amazing professionals. And so before we go into shoot a piece of content with an artist, there is multiple pre-production meetings. There's documentation for everything we want to film. There's exact specs on what the drummer needs as far as like drum set and microphones and audio and listen and playback and all this. And so it's much more complicated, but I think that's one thing that really helps to create content of that quality is the amount of time that Brandon, Roman, Dylan, and all the Drumeo team spend to basically ensure that every detail is thought about before they go into the studio. And that's huge props to them for putting out that such amazing quality.
Yeah, your team is first rate, you know, and all great drummers as well, which always helps, doesn't it? When you're all there for the same reason.
They all love drums. Like everyone just like, we can sit around and talk about drums even when we're not working. So it's like, we would do it anyway. And now we somehow are fortunate enough to get paid for it. And so that's like a pretty awesome thing that we're all very grateful for.
Definitely. So, you know, going back to your basement days, did you ever think that it would be what it is now? Obviously, you know, you want to aspire to get better and improve, but I mean, did you ever think, this is what I want it to be? Or was it just...
I always said I want to build something big. I always talked about building a company that was here long after I'm gone. Something that would, you know, stand the test of time. And that's where it's always helped us to make those types of decisions within the context of running a company. You can make short-term decisions or you can make long-term decisions. And for us at Dramio and Mizora, we are always thinking about the long-term. How can we create value in this community of drummers and create something that actually helps people to start and stay playing the drums? And so I always said I wanted it to be a really big company, and that's what I dreamed of. But I don't think I knew what I was wishing for when we were 10 people and then 20 people, 30 people, great, everything's good. You know, I was just talking to someone about this earlier today, is when you're running a company and it's around 30 people, I can know every single person. I can know every single person's significant other, their partner, and how many kids they have. And I can take them for dinner or lunches multiple times per year, and we can really connect. And I can have depth with all of the people I work with. But now the company is bigger. There's 150 people that work at Mizora. And it's really changed. And I was so used to and so comfortable with, like, just going in and working with all my friends. And so now I go to Mizora and I walk around and I see people there. I'm like, do they work here? And what do they do? And one time I made the mistake. We had an artist out for our piano side. And he was in the kitchen, and I'm like, hey, so what do you do here? And he's like, oh, I'm actually the artist. I'm filming on piano. I had no idea. So things are happening all over the place, and it's just gotten bigger. And that's been definitely, like, that's been an adjustment for me, because I'm very much a relator. I like to connect with people, especially people that are, you know, working at my company. But it's been an adjustment having to become comfortable with the fact that it's too big. There's no way I can connect with everyone on that same level that I used to. And so now I have to try and figure out the new way to operate, right? We're always having to reinvent ourselves as we get to new levels within our business. So it's exciting, but it's definitely a change.
Yeah. Would you say it's lost perhaps some of its family kind of feel? Because it's got to, hasn't it, when it grows to that? It kind of always grows out of control, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's what we used to say. It's like, it's a family. And then as the company grows, it's like, well, it's a family, but why did you just fire this person? That's not a very family thing. And business is business. And I'm good at saying, like, here I am playing drums, I'm making art, I'm making music, I'm creating. But then there's a certain time I have to do business. And that is a separate discipline and a separate way of thinking. So we have since had to shift. And we think of our team more like someone would think of a sports team. There's different positions on the roster. Everyone has to become the best they can at their specific position. And everyone is, instead of doing five different jobs and being very much generalists within the context of the company, people are now specialists. And we have people that just edit videos. And our video editing team is incredible. They like have a gong that they hit every time their video gets to 1 million views on YouTube. And it's like a really cool culture in the context of that group of people that are professionals at editing videos and editing content for our members and our YouTube channels. So it's changed. It's now more of a team philosophy and a team mindset, a performance mindset, as opposed to when it was really small, it was more of the family model.
But it's going to grow. You've got to make sacrifices when things grow like that. It's just, there's no way around it, is there? Simple.
There's no way around it. And that sometimes that can sound cold to people, but that's like the nature of most of the companies that we align with here. We're probably using Macs or iPhones or things like these are huge companies that that have to run a certain way in order to continue to stay in business. And so we've had to constantly reinvent the company at every new level. And we constantly hit these ceilings, and then we kind of, you know, bump at the ceiling for it can be 6 to 12 months or even longer sometimes. But hopefully trying to break through to that next level, because our mission is, a big one. And we believe in a world where everyone plays music. And we think a world where everyone can make music is going to be a better world. I think there'd be less war, less fighting. I think everyone would be happier. Music is proven to improve people's lives psychologically and physically. So I think it's a bold mission to try and, like, get everyone on the music creation train, but it's a really, really fun pathway to be on.
You know, there's so many things far worse you could be doing. So, you know, yeah. Take my hat off to you for that.
Thank you.
It's an amazing thing. And, you know, you say 150 staff and you think, oh, gosh, that's not that many. But when you see 150 people in a venue, for example, a small venue, it's a lot of people. And do you tend to attract musicians for like video editors as well? Or is it seen as it's just a job to a video editor? I don't mean just a job, but do you tend to attract musicians who play maybe, you know, at the weekend or something?
Yeah, I would say, if I had to guess, I would say around 75% of our staff are musicians. Sure. And the other 25%, it's not like they don't like music. They love music and they probably listen to it all the time. They just maybe never, their art is more like editing of videos, or their output is more in like the world of finance and things like that. And so not everyone plays an instrument, but yes, we attract some amazing musicians. Actually, a funny note is on our Christmas party, our thing is like, we've always done it. Our Christmas party is legendary, and we have staff from all over the world. So around 30% of our staff are not actually on site. They're just remote, but we fly everyone in to Abbotsford, and we have like everyone in plus their spouses or partners. And we have the hugest party, and we set up a stage with all the instruments, and there's a sign-up sheet. We don't hire a band because we have like 10 or 20 bands just within the context of the company. And it's the music is so good all night, and you get to hear all these different talented people who are just like, you know, maybe they're in student support, or maybe they're in video editing, and now they're on stage shredding or singing a cool song or something like that. And so, yeah, our staff is incredibly talented, and they just all love music.
Oh, wow. I want to work for Drumeo. Forget this.
No, we need you here, man.
just tell me about, you don't have to go into too much detail, but I can imagine, you know, even way back when this started, the investment must have been pretty terrifying to take it to the next level. Was that, did you always have the confidence to just go, do you know what, this is going to work, the investment, the money's going to go, because this equipment that you own, I guess, now is not cheap, is it? Let's be honest, all the you know, microphones, I mean, DPA microphones and what have you, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, when you invest in a business, there's along the way, there's a lot of people that would love to tell you why it won't work. And people generally do that because most of the time they're right. You've probably heard the stats when it comes to small businesses. Mm-hmm. I believe it's something like 9 out of 10 small businesses fail within the first 5 years. But I don't know how accurate that is for where you are in the UK. But most businesses fail because business is incredibly difficult to make work. You have to constantly have some sort of product or service that connects to the marketplace in a meaningful way. And as the marketplace shifts, as people, you know, change, as buyer behavior changes and as culture shifts, people want different things. And so if the business can't keep up with the culture of the marketplace, then you're done. And so there's a lot of people along the way that said, this won't work. I don't know what you're doing. No one can learn music online. Why are you doing this? It's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. But I don't know why, man. I'm maybe just really hard-headed and dumb, but I just kept going. And for the first like 10 plus years, if not more, it was more about survival. You know, there was no money. I was barely making my mortgage payments and rent payments. At times we had to lay staff off because we literally didn't have money to pay people. Yeah. And so there was a lot of times where I would say probably 3 or 4 times where we were almost out of business. And then we kind of pulled through very, very stressful times and we made it. And so business is about survival. Some people say business is war. I'm not going to say that. I don't think it's war. No one's dying over here. We're making drum lessons and things like that. And so, but business is really hard. And that's why not everyone is an entrepreneur and chooses to invest in their own business. And that's totally fine. Everyone is different. You know, some people want to become business people and run their own company. Others just love working for someone and being a supporting role in another company. And we need everyone. So yeah, it's all good.
So would you describe yourself as a risk taker then?
I have a very high tolerance for risk. I would say a dangerously high tolerance. And I actually was just talking to I was in a meeting, a finance meeting yesterday. I don't know are your listeners going to like us talking about all this stuff? It's like, cool. You're normally talking about drumming, so we're talking about finance. Okay. Yeah, I was in a finance meeting yesterday and we were looking at everything and she's like, why are you doing all this? I'm like, I don't know. It's like, I just like to, invest and I find it exciting and I can't take anything with me. So why not build something when we're here? And my thing is just trying to make things better than when I was here. So when I leave, when I'm gone from this world, I left it better than when I found it. And so that's my thing, is just try and create something that's valuable and try and do something for people that actually makes life better. And that involves a lot of risk, you know?
Definitely. I remember somebody saying, a friend who had a lot of equipment on finance, and he said, how do you sleep at night? He said, I sleep fine. He said, however, my bank manager has the sleepless nights, you know? It's like, well, that's it, isn't it? You know?
My dad always says, like, when you owe the bank a small amount of money, that's your problem. And when you owe the bank a large amount of money, that's their problem.
Big time.
So,
but do you know, you can't produce content to this quality without it. It's a simple fact, you know, and the right people to operate it. And the risk has paid off. You know, the results are there to see. Nobody can criticize anything that you put out, you know, from production to the quality of the materials. There's nothing that can be criticized, I don't think, personally. I'm sure somebody will always try, but.
So Matty, from the front side of things, it's like social media, right? Highlight reels, everything looks perfect, everything's like sunshine and roses. And then if you look behind the stage at Musora and at Drumeo, like, we are always challenging ourselves, and I think to our detriment. Like, people like Brandon who's you've seen on a lot of the videos, almost all the videos lately, and Brandon, he's like, he is so hard on himself to make sure, like, what he does he's really proud of and is a success. And even when you look at it and it might look like everything's great, he's still probably beating himself up about certain things. And I mean, we need to celebrate our wins, but we also can't get too complacent and too comfortable. Otherwise we won't want to continue to push ourselves. And so I would say, I love it that you're seeing this, like, sunshine and roses front facing, but behind the scenes, it's a little bit of chaos sometimes, and that's okay.
Yeah, you know, it should be like that, shouldn't it? You know, it's not.
Yeah.
But as long as the end result is the bit that we're seeing, then it's all good. Job's
yeah.
done.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's like a band going into a studio recording an album and all the hell that they go through, like dealing with each other and fighting over certain parts. And then out of that, sometimes you get the most brilliant albums, you know, but no one really, people only look at the album and how brilliant it is. And then the musicians are standing back being like, you know how much we fought during that session? You know how much heartache we went through during that time? So that's kind of like business as well.
Yeah. And let's go back a little bit. Can you remember the first, was the idea, I'll talk a bit about it first, was the idea always to bring in artists to do it, or were you going to do it yourself for much of the time? And can you remember the first guest you had on?
Oh, yeah. So I started in 2003, and we started by filming videos and putting them on eBay as digital downloads. In 2005, we filmed a DVD that teaching the one-handed drum roll. And that's kind of when we moved away from digital downloads, but there was no artist then. When YouTube came out and we wanted to put videos on YouTube, that's kind of when we first started working with local drum instructors in our area in around 2006 and 2007. But it was very much on a small scale, nothing like you see today. And then around 2014, or 13, I connected with a guy named Sean Brown at Yamaha, and I kind of shared with him the vision of Drumeo and what we're trying to do. And I said, I know you guys have a lot of artists that you're connected with that use the Yamaha products. They have endorses. And so he listened, you know, patiently. And then 2 weeks later, after I got home, a couple skids of Yamaha drums showed up. And then a few weeks after that, Larnell Lewis showed up at Drumeo, and that was our first official bigger guest. Yeah. And he was playing the Yamaha DTX 950K, which was their kind of flagship electronic drum set model, with the Gen 16 Zildjian Gen 16 cymbals.
Yeah, way
back in the day, right? And so now it's cool to see Zildjian just launching their new kit, their Alchemy. But then that happened. Then the second artist was Kenny Arnoff.
Wow, yeah.
And we're just like, you know, we haven't got Kenny Arnoff back since then. And I messed up that one so badly before we started. Like Kenny was so upset at me, and rightfully so. We totally messed up the whole promotion of it. It was on a page that was like a subpage of a subpage. We should have put it on the homepage that he was here, and we just didn't even know what we were doing. You know, talk about faking it till we make it. So Kenny was just like, "What are you guys doing here? What kind of thing is this?" And so 30 seconds before I went live with Kenny, he was like very upset at me. And then we go live and he was just like, the perfect, like, professional rock star. And we've since laughed about it when I've seen him at NAMM here and there. So Kenny's like such a gem. I'd love to have him back. After that, we had Sonny Emery.
Yep.
And then Tony Royster Jr. through Roland. And then as the company started seeing how many views these videos got and how well the equipment was represented, and we really cared about making the drums sound incredible.
Yes.
We were kind of like, there was people posting videos and content then, but nothing like this that helped to connect the industry to the community in that way. You know, Modern Drummer at that point was still just selling magazine ads. They didn't really have a digital offering. There was Drum Magazine and Rhythm and all those, like, they were the ones that were basically connecting the industry to the community through magazine ads and things like that. But we were kind of the new kid on the block, and we were doing it all through video and just distributing on YouTube and social media. And I think they, over time, started to recognize the value of that. And we still, to this day, work with almost every single drum company. I love, they're such great people at all these drum companies, like Pearl, Yamaha, DW, Roland, Ludwig. Yeah. Great companies. All we have, like, drummers are really lucky to have all these legendary brands to choose from.
Definitely. And speaking of the drums themselves, I'm guessing you have a fair old stock of drums. If I appreciate somebody might have something that's pretty unique to them that will need to be brought in, but do you know off the top of your head how much drum equipment you have in? How many kits? any idea whatsoever?
I don't know. I think it's around 50 drum kits,
yeah.
But I'm not totally sure. Maybe a couple hundred snares, 200 or 300 snares. But yeah, we slowly, like, as I was growing up, I was touring. I was totally broke. And so I would buy too many drums, and then I'd have to sell them to pay off my credit card. And then I had like this Yamaha anniversary, like recording custom anniversary kit, which I'm like still kicking myself for selling. I had this like totally mint Ludwig clear Vistalite kit that it looked like it had just been taken out of the boxes. It was like from the 70s, like no spider cracks on it, perfect condition. And I had to sell these kits. And so I still kick myself. And so my rule now is like, I'm only buying, I'm not selling. My kids can pawn them off for way less than I paid for them once I'm gone.
Oh, dear me. So yeah. Are these kits that the artists can use then, if you've got, you know?
Yeah, there's both. So a lot of times, like, what was it? Tama just sent us a whole back line. So we have like 16-inch, 18-inch, 20-inch, 22, 24-inch bass drums, and then 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, like gong drums. They sent us the whole thing. So when an artist comes out, we have whatever sizes they want. And we had a lot of Tom artists out, so they just said that's easier. Same with Gretsch. Gretsch has been really great with us and sending us all the backline. So we have like one or two kits from each of these main brands. And then there's like the private collection, which is stuff that we've acquired. So I have an old vintage Tama kit with concert toms. I was able to pick up a few old Miatsi kits, Hollywood Miatsi, the first kind of electronic drums from Ron Dinette. He had them in storage, and so we took those on. And old Rogers kits. I have an old 1964 Camco Oakland Lawn. Yeah, it's like one of my favorite sounding kits. Oh. So like fat and punchy, just beautiful kits. And yeah, we have lots. But the companies are great. They send us a lot of backline.
So if an artist comes along and says, do you know what? I know I play this brand, but they're really cool. can I use the Cam Coke? Can that happen? Or are you protective over that?
No, they can use whatever. They're meant to be played. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. We've actually started, because we have so many drums, Tyson Finley, the Drumeo resident drum tech, who's actually going out on tour with Brian Adams to tech for Pat Stewart. So we're sad to lose him out of Drumeo for, five weeks they're gone for. But Tyson is great at he manages the entire collection of drums, and he's connected with a lot of different promoters and drum companies. And so we actually are able to help other people who are just, they're playing a gig in Vancouver and they need this type of backline. So we are able to send our stuff out to help with that. So it's good. So
cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you've got more drums and equipment in than any shop anywhere near, I guess.
Exactly. We do. Yeah. Yeah.
So run me through the average day when you've got an artist coming in who's going to record some lessons or a first listen or whatever. What's the process? Do you generally get the drums into some kind of shape before he turns up, sound wise?
Yeah. So the day before the artist comes in, there's what's called bump in. And so that's where we bump in the session for that artist. And so Tyson will already have had the list of the artist rider, exactly what they want to use. We will have already messaged any of the companies with things that we maybe didn't have to get those. We've gotten the right heads in. And Tyson will take the kit from our backline, bring it into the studio. He'll put up an image of the most recent image of the drummer at a gig, and he'll try and his best to recreate the kit exactly. And I think a lot of artists appreciate that, because when they come and they sit down, they're not having to put on all the drum heads, and they just make their minor adjustments, and then they can start sound checking. So that's what happens. They bump it in, they mic it up, they get sounds. Then the artist comes in, they'll do their final sound check that morning of their first day, and then they'll go into what has been planned to film. So we film all sorts of different things with artists. You've probably seen some of the videos where mm-hmm. this artist hears a song this drummer here. Yeah, those are really popular. And so they're kind of strategic when they do those. They want we want to make sure the artist is really comfortable at that moment. It's not the first thing we throw at them. So we generally do something, I think, a little bit more planned, or something that's prepared. And so, yeah.
I think that is a genius idea. Whoever came up with that, they deserve a huge pat on the back. Who was it?
Do you want to know a story about that?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's a song. I think we had Larnell Lewis out. It was his second or third time out at Drumeo. And we were sitting having dinner at the end of the first session. And he was recording some stuff for our membership. So we record content for our membership and then much less content publicly. There's much more in our membership. But we were talking, and we were just talking about songs and music. And I think someone mentioned Metallica, Enter Sandman. And then Larnell's like, what? We're like, Enter Sandman. Metallica. So I've never heard that. Huh? You've never heard that. And so Dave Atkinson had the brilliant idea. He's like, well, tomorrow we're going to show you that song and we're going to see if you can play it after one listen. Because I think we had done something else with Larnell in that vein, just more of a fusion track. And Larnell crushed it because he's literally one of the best drummers in the world. So we did it. And Larnell played it, and he's like, oh, yeah, it's cool, cool song. And then I remember when I saw the first edit of it. I saw the edit, we didn't know what this format would be or how people would receive it. And Larnell crushed it, but it's not like he played it absolutely perfect. Oh. And that song is an iconic song. So I remember looking at it being like, is Larnell going to be happy with his performance of this track? Is Larnell going to feel like, oh, people are seeing him make some mistakes, which there was some mistakes, right? But little did we know, that vulnerability and that an artist kind of taking those risks is what people really love to see online. And so we almost cut that video. We almost just decided not to publish it. But thankfully we did. Someone talked me off of a cliff there, and we published a video, and I think it got 5 or 7 million views in the first 7 days or something like that.
Same.
And so, yeah. And so after that, it's just been like an artist comes in, Brandon will have a whole list of songs. Sometimes they have to roll through quite a few before they find one that the artist hasn't heard. And then they, whatever happens, happens, you know? And we've had a few people that it didn't work out at all and we didn't release them, but I'm hoping maybe one day we can revive those videos and release them once the artist, cause they're, it's a very like vulnerable moment for the artist. It very much exposes them. Yeah. So they're like this, they have a process to coming up with parts. They have a process to creating their music. And we're just like trying to compress it into like a 10-minute video. And that they're like, that's not how it goes, you know? And so they sometimes feel very like exposed, and that's not a good feeling. But there's good sports.
Oh, well, do you know, we have a mutual friend in Todd Sukerman. And Todd was over in the UK early March. He was doing some masterclasses, which one was for me. And he told me a little story about one of the first listens. And he didn't want to do it, did he, at all? And I think the track was Rope, Foo Fighters, memory.
Yeah.
And he said, I was adamant that I wasn't going to do this. And it took a little, how do I put this politely? It took a little bribe maybe to get him to do it. Do you want to tell the story, Jared?
Sure.
You were there, so you know it better than me.
So the studio team was in the studio with Todd, and they came to me at the end of the day. We were about to go out for dinner, and they're like, yeah, Todd, he doesn't want to do, here's a song, doesn't want to do it. I'm like, what? This is like, does he care? Like, most artists want to film a video that's pretty much guaranteed to get a lot of views and a lot of attention, right? That's why we're here. We're trying to promote drumming and we're trying to promote the artist. And why does he not want to do it? And so I didn't get it. So I sat down with Todd and we were having martinis and steak. And I'm like, so I was trying to convince him, and he's just like, no, I don't like it. He's like, just like I was saying before, he's like, that's not my process. That's not how I do things. And so then the night kind of went on, and I kept coming back to it every time. I'm like, hey, what about this? Would you do it if we did this? And he's like, is there any other reason you're here other than trying to get me to do this? He felt like I was pushing too hard. I was like, okay, fine. But then he asked me, hey, where did you get that green, like jade green Yamaha kit? That's a beautiful kit. And I'm like, oh, that's like, I found it on eBay. And it's a very, very rare color. It was only available in Japan, I believe. Very few of them made it out to North America. And I happen to have, like, I bought an 8-inch tom for, like, way too much money because they're so hard to find an 8-inch tom in that color. And so I had an 8, a 12, 13, a 16, 22-inch kick, and then a 6.5 by 14 snare and a 5.5 by 14 snare. So it's one of my favorite kits. And I'm like, oh, so you really like that kit, hey? He's like, yeah, I love that. If you ever want to sell that snare drum, let me know. I'm like, well, how about this? How about I give you the snare drum if you do the Here's a Song video? And then he couldn't resist. Drummers can't resist drums, Maddie. It's the one thing we have weaknesses for. And so, yeah, he was gracious enough to he took the snare. I believe he actually traded me for a Beijer snare drum, which is a brand, B-E-I-J-E-R, which is a drum that, like, he has a few of them, I believe, but it's a custom drum guy that makes them. And so beautiful, beautiful snare drum. And then he did the video. The video did really, really well. Probably has 500,000 views or more.
Great performance as well.
Oh, he just absolutely crushed it. Like, he listened to it once and he even like did the solo section really, really well. So Todd is like one of the best drummers in the world, and I'm still trying to get my flams up to where his are. I don't think there is a drummer that can solo with flams better than he can around the toms and the snare drum, doing little melodic orchestrations. He's one of the most beautifully musical drummers ever.
No arguments from here. I mean, the masterclass he did was nothing short of breathtaking. And yeah, well, you'll know exactly how good he is. And he's been on a few times, hasn't he? And there was what was the oh, it was quite some time ago. Was it on top of a mountain or something or other in the rain? That was a crazy idea. And how he managed to play to that level in those conditions,
Hey. Well, Todd is from Austin, and Austin is hot.
Yeah.
You know, and so when I said, we're going to load up a few helicopters with all of our gear, and we're going to go land on the side of a mountain near a waterfall, and the helicopters will be in the background, and we'll set up your drums, and you'll play. And he's like, well, what if it's raining? I'm like, same thing. Well, you'll play. And so we were out there, we were setting up, and we were trying to wait for a break in the rain. And it just wasn't stopping. And it was so cold. We had these packets that you could like break them and put them in your hands to keep your hands warm. So he was sitting in the helicopter just trying to stay warm. And we're all from Canada, so we're like, whatever, it's no big deal. It's not that cold for us. It's just rain. If you live in BC, you must get used to the rain. Right. And so when we thought it was, we just had to go, even though it was still raining, he came out and he absolutely crushed the song, like played so good. Just played with energy and the water popping off of the cymbals and the drum heads. It was so cool to see. I just remember being so inspired after seeing him do that, and then very terrified on the way home when our helicopter pilot just decided to like go into a waterfall and quickly veer off. It was scary, man. But
you know,
so fun.
I'm amazed those cymbals rang at all with all the rain on them, because you know the effect water has on cymbals. It's not great.
Yeah, there may have not or may not have been some overdubs done to allow those to actually come out, because they sounded just like you're muting the cymbal. So I think we went back in and watched the video, and whenever there was a crash hit, I think he then would do that crash, so then we recorded it in the studio. But the drums and everything else was like, that's like mountain sound. So it's
great.
Pretty cool.
So do you have a favorite episode or a favorite lesson, whatever it might be? Do you have one that I mean, that's probably up there, I'd imagine, isn't it?
Oh, everything with Todd is up there. One of my favorite videos we've ever done is his first solo. And if you're watching this, go and search Todd Zuckerman drum solo on YouTube. And it's the one where it's the older one where he was on our channel the first time he came on. You'll just hear like the most beautiful flams. And speaking of flams, I would say my all-time favorite lesson was the third artist we ever had out. When you ask that question, I mean, they're all good, but this one always pops in my head. And it was with Sonny Emery, and it was linear exercises and flammer sizes. So he has these flammer sizes where it's such good chop builders. So you do like three right-handed flams in a row, and then you do a right-handed flam, right, left, and then you do three left-handed flams in a row, and then you do a left-hand flam, left, right, and then it alternates back and forth. And I was just literally watching TV doing this exercise the other day. It's one of my go-to exercises.
You.
Yeah, for sure. It just stuck with me, and it's still hard. I'd never do it like Sonny Emery did it, but if you haven't, most people probably don't even know about that lesson, you know, but it's literally, there's so much gold in that when it comes to building chops and flow around the kit.
You know, I found some real gems that perhaps I hadn't, known about before. And one was Jason Sutter when he did his brush thing, which is quite a while ago now, but just the most, I mean, you'd look at Jason and go, Marilyn Manson's drummer, can he play with? And that, it just blew my mind. I mean, Jason's been on the podcast since, but
yeah,
just wow.
Yeah, he's an incredible drummer and very underrated. Like, everyone thinks of him just like hard rock, but he can play with such touch and feel. And the stuff he did with brushes was so technically challenging. Like, if you haven't tried, a lot of new drummers don't even try brushes. They just look at it and be like, oh, that looks easy. And the reality is, people like Jason and Frank Bellucci and Steve Smith and all these guys, they make brushes look easy. You know, the way they just kind of can, they have that flow and they have the movement. to this day, that those techniques have eluded me. I wish I could do that.
Yeah. But, you know, you've always kind of, you've always got an eye on the next amazing drummer. There's lots of young guys and girls coming through, which is always, do you keep an active eye out for social media for people who are kind of on their way up? Obviously, Grayson the Croupman's an easy one to pick out. Grayson's done some clinics and masterclasses for me over here as well. And a phenomenal talent who's just gone, you know, he's only going that way, isn't he? Let's be honest.
Yeah. I don't, when we had him out, his channel was maybe less than 100,000 like Instagram followers, and he wasn't huge yet. But I think everyone who watched him play knew that there was something special there with him. He is just like such a hard worker. And we are just happy to be like along for the ride with what he's doing and happy to be a small part of his success. But yeah, you can check my screen time on my phone if you want to see how much I'm on social media looking for drummers and musicians. And, you know, that's what we do. We love to showcase musicians and artists and kind of show their process to the world and how they do what they do and feature them, you know, especially artists that maybe don't get the recognition they deserve. And it started with drummers because drummers were always in the back and always like behind a big drum set and didn't really get put out front ever. And so that's what Drumeo was the first one to just kind of say, hey, drummers are the feature here. All eyes on the drummer. And yeah, so we're always looking for new artists. We're always looking for new drummers to feature. And that comes from a blend of like seeing what audience is like on social media, but also just seeing like what drummers are doing cool things that maybe need to be, a story needs to be told about that. And so Brandon and Roman and the team, they're going to a lot of venues actually. You know, they were just with Charlie Benante at Madison Square Garden and they were filming behind the scenes, and they have filmed with Chad Smith. They just did a feature on Tanner Wayne from In Flames. And there's lots more of this kind of stuff coming. So, yeah. What's that?
I was going to say, you don't rest on your laurels, do you? There's always something happening all the time and you know, new features. Yeah. And I think it's incredible. I really do.
Thank you. Yeah, we're always trying to like beat our last best thing, right? So we don't want to ever say, oh, that was good and that's good enough. It's not. It's good to celebrate those wins. But like I said, it's still like we want to be here for many, many years. We don't want to make a short-term decision and just like be done. Like it's not good enough. We always want to keep pushing.
I mean, there's one in particular, which I never thought I would see the day when somebody would get Phil Collins to come out and do what he did with, along with Nick. That must have been quite a moment when that was agreed and signed off.
So the story behind that is we connected with Nick because Nick had been watching some Drumeo videos, and I think Nick came out first, maybe afterwards. So his dad Phil is not able to travel. So we actually, for the interview portion of what we captured, was in Switzerland at a castle that we rented. And that footage is still in edit. We're still working on it and working on some licensing things and stuff like that. But Phil has not done any other interviews since then. He, from my understanding, like he's not doing any. And that was pretty much the last one. And it was taken and done from very much from a drummer's perspective. So we talked to him about the creation of drum parts and being he's a drummer that sings or something like that. Like he's very much a drummer first.
Yeah.
And there's some really cool moments in the interview portion of that. And then to connect with Nick and kind of like that lineage was really, really cool. And so I'm excited for that to finally come out because, man, we have put in so much resource and time into that project and the world needs to see it. So it's really cool.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's probably going to be your biggest views ever, isn't it? When that comes out.
Well, it might be. I have no idea, but I know it's going to be, it's going to be long because we captured so much. And so even though maybe views won't be as high, the amount of like actual watch time people spending with the content will be a long, long time. So
And do you, maybe a difficult question to answer, do you have any idea when it may come out? Would it be this year or next year, or is it just, you don't know yet, I guess?
Well, I hope it's this year. Yeah. I hope it's this year. That's what we're pushing for. But I say it's better. It's because it's like likely his last interview and all that. It's like, it's more important that it's done right than quick. And so we'll make sure it's done right. And then we only have to do it once.
When I saw that was happening, it was kind of like, wow, this is a little bit special. So,
yeah.
Excuse me. And so tell me, is there a guest that you've perhaps always wanted and they've said, no, you don't have to name names, because obviously you don't want to upset people, but has anybody ever flatly said, I don't want to do it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, that's a surprise.
Lots of people say no. Yeah, because it's not like, I think it was Jerry Brown. He came out with I think he plays Yamaha, and he played with Stevie Wonder and many other people. Yeah. Great drummer. But he said, he once told me, he's like, this is different. He's like, I've played big like arenas and I have not been nervous at all. But coming to Drumeo, it's like, I'm not in the background, I'm in the forefront. And not only that, I have 8 cameras on me. And not only that, it's live streamed and people can ask questions in real time. So he was saying it's like, it made him way more nervous than just like a normal gig, because the gig is what drummers actually do. It's what these professional drummers who are touring, it's like they're not professional content creators or educators in all cases. Like many of them are great teachers, but many of these drummers who are performing for huge crowds, like they're not honing their teaching side always. And so when they have to come out and now like teach, that makes them nervous. And sometimes they just literally don't have time, you know? So yeah. And like the drum community, like it's small. And so it's not like we have, like if we would go to Ringo, like we can't just go to Ringo and offer him a rate to come out. He'll just like, it doesn't, the money doesn't matter to him. So the mission has to be something that is more meaningful. And so we have to align on our missions. And sometimes that happens, you know, if an artist comes out with a new book or they have something where they want to tell a story, and that's where they'll see us almost as like a press stop. And so that's been good. That allows us to connect with some of these larger artists where otherwise it would be very difficult to bring them out.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. And I totally understand. It's like trying to get somebody to do a drum clinic. If they're just band players and they don't feel they have anything to offer, mm-hmm. you know, not so much a soloist, but being in that spotlight and having to communicate with an audience, it's not for everybody, is it?
No, it's not. And that's totally fine. So, but that said, we would love to work with, we have our long list of artists, which we still want to work with. They just finished a shoot with Stuart Copeland in LA. And that's what we're doing a lot more, is where instead of inviting the artist to come here, because Drumeo is in Abbotsford, British Columbia. Abbotsford is around an hour east out of Vancouver. And in Abbotsford, there's two things. Okay. There's churches, and there's raspberries and blueberries. Okay. So I know that's three things, but I never said I could count, but there's not a lot here. There's not like a huge music scene. It's not like Nashville or New York. There's like, if you want to come here, there's like, it's like beautiful. There's mountains all around you. The people are amazing, but some artists, like they're fine to go to Vancouver, but they don't necessarily want to come hang out in Abbotsford for 3 or 4 days. And so that's where we've been made more of a concerted effort to actually go to them, whether that's on the road or whether that's getting a studio in their local area, so we can kind of capture some of their story.
You make it kind of hard for them to resist, don't you? Hard to say no. But we'll come to you. Where do you want to do it? And it's a lot harder to refuse at that point, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many drummers that have such great stories. And our thing is, like, one thing we've noticed, and it's one of our missions, is like we like I said earlier, we believe in a world where everyone can play music. And We focus a lot on getting people to start playing drums. So we call it going from zero to one. They don't play, and now they're playing. And then we focus on getting them to stay playing drums, going from one to two, you know, getting better and moving up that the ladder. Because it's not enough just to get people started. We need to keep them playing. And we find that this content with these inspirational artists, where they have iconic music that we all grew up listening to and still listen to, we find telling their stories is really helping to drive that mission forward. And that actually benefits everyone in the industry, not just us. You know, it benefits everyone to have more people making music.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got one more thing to ask, and this one is always kind of fascinated me or interested me a little bit. If you could have had a drummer that's no longer alive, if you could have had them on, who would it be?
Oh, easy. Easy. What? Can you guess?
I'm going to say John Bonham. John Bonham.
Oh, that's a good one. But now people are going to be disappointed because that's not what I was going to say.
Okay. Keith Moon?
No. Try again.
Am I causing you problems here?
You're going to get me in trouble.
Oh, Keith Moon. Cozy Powell. Oh, gosh. See, that was my three go-tos.
Okay, so I know who yours were. Mine would be Jeff Porcaro. I would absolutely love to have...
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah, I think that would be pretty decent. Yeah.
pretty decent.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Just because, like, I love Toto, so I'm going to be selfish. Like, obviously, John Bonham, a lot of people would say, you got to say John Bonham. Yeah. Or you got to say Buddy Rich. Like, imagine Buddy Rich doing a Drumeo session. Like, Buddy Rich hears Metallica for the first time.
I don't know what he'd make of that, I'll be honest.
he'd probably say it's shit and just go on.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Need bass drums for this one.
Exactly.
Jared, this has been an absolute treat. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope you've enjoyed it. I really have. And it's good to talk about this incredible product that, you know, you've given to so many millions of drummers around the world. You know, even if they're not subscribed to Drumeo, the joy that we get from just seeing the YouTube stuff alone is priceless. So thank you for that, you know, and long may it continue, I say. And I hopefully we maybe see you over in the UK at some point and we can catch up and have a martini and a steak, who knows.
That sounds like a great plan, Maddie. It was so good to be on here today and chat with you a little bit, so thank you for having me.
That's a pleasure, and I promise not to try and bribe you for a Jade Green snare for it might be. Honestly, thanks so much, Jared. I really appreciate it. See you again. Bye-bye.
All right. See ya. Bye-bye. There we go.